This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Well, hello there, Brace Country. This is The Front Porch, and we are off Leo's rocker. With me is, as usual, senior writer Fred Owens.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Here we are on the porch, grousing about the fact that the 14-game streak is now over. The Braves lost this afternoon 1-0. They gave it a chance in the ninth inning with the bases loaded and two outs, but just couldn't get that last hit to push any runs across.
No and surprise.
You knew it was going to happen sooner or later, but I admit I'm a little surprised it came against the Cubs and against this first game against the Cubs. And after the Cubs had lost 10 games in a row themselves and had gotten beat up like crazy against the Yankees and the Padres especially. So the fact that all this has happened is, you know, good reason not to be a betting man on baseball. That's for sure.
Yeah, baseball's a horrible thing to bet on. There's almost anything in the world I'd rather bet on than baseball. This afternoon, there's positives to this afternoon. Charlie pitched a sterling game. He went seven strong innings. He struck out a boatload of people. That curveball was dipping and diving on him. His changeup wasn't quite as good, but that curveball was everywhere. He was buzzing that fastball by him and confusing those kids on the kids really on the Cubs team. They just really had no idea what was coming next. So he confused all of them, including Big Brother Contreras, who you weren't able to watch the game, but Big Brother Contreras got a bloop double down the line, started to go to hit a double to left field, and caromed off the wall right to Duvall, who turned around and threw a rocket to second base. And William had to throw down the anchor, Wilson had to throw down the anchor and scurry back to first base. And Willie, the kid, was in the dugout laughing at his brother when that happened, which was, I thought, was hilarious.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I was paying attention on the ESPN Gamecast site, but unfortunately, where I'm working, I cannot get a video. Darn it! But I did notice that Charlie had struck out like seven out of the first 10 batters he faced through the first three innings. I think he ended up with nine for the game. And that's a great sign. That was definitely his best game of the year. And that it's a shame that they couldn't give him any offense to support that. But, apparently, the Braves ran into something today pitching for the Cubs that, they weren't expecting. And that's, you know, that's kind of been the mantra of this year, is when they run into good pitching, the offense almost effectively shuts down. I think they struck out 12 times themselves on the day, and that it isn't conducive to a lot of run scoring. It's effectively what they have been doing a lot in the first part of the season. But what I'm hoping, though, is that they'll just shake this off, say, okay, the pressure's off now, the streak is over, but we can start another streak again. It does mean that their advance on trying to get back towards first place has paused for a bit. The Mets right now, as I speak, are leading the Marlins in the sixth inning 3-1. So there's a chance they could end up losing a full game to go back to 5.5 back in the standings. The Phillies, for their part, in the bottom of the sixth, are tied with the Nationals right now of all teams, 3-3 in Washington.
Yeah, I was going to say the Nationals, they're the kind of team they got some of them players on there. When they decide they can actually do something, they're going to come back and they can do something and hurt you. It's just a question whether the Mets shut them down. The one hurt the Braves this afternoon was the wind was blowing in from Wrigley, and Olson hit a shot and Ronnie hit a shot that would have been out of every ballpark in the league, but not when the wind's blowing in at Wrigley and anything up in the air. If Jason Hayward make a catch on a pop fly down the right field line, he slid to make the catch, and by the time he got to where the ball was supposed to be, the wind had blown it 6 feet farther away from him. And he looked like a fool on that, but that was purely the wind doing it. And so the wind hurt them more because they rely on the home run, and when you don't get the home run, Ronnie hit one the last one. He hit the dead center field, and he was sure it was gone. Center fielder caught it on the warning, short of the warning track. And Ronnie just slung his arm and said, well, I don't believe that, and went to the dugout. And that's probably not exactly what he said, but you could see he was frustrated with that. They either go to the Lake Michigan or they land on the warning track. And the other thing bothered me, I know you didn't see the game, but there was an at bat for Ronnie later in the game where the first pitch was in a little bit on him and he backed him off the plate. And the next pitch was on outer half, but it was knee high and it was a straight. And I said, oh, that's going to go. And he just stood up and looked at it. And it was 95, basically above the knees on over the plate. He looked at it and then swung at a pitch above his letters and struck out. And he spit on that fastball and then swung at that ball that was up around his eyes. And I don't understand that. I mean, he's been on that fastball in the zone all, I mean, I suspect his average on that ball's 400, 385 on that pitch. And he just looked at it like he didn't see it. So maybe it was daytime baseball, in which case he's got a problem because tomorrow, next 2 days are daytime baseball. It was just, I couldn't believe it. I did a double take when I saw it. The wind hurt us more than anything else. All home run boppers couldn't bop.
Yeah, and that explains the 1-0 final, obviously. But, you mentioned Acuna and how he's reacting there. You know, he hasn't seemed like himself the last three or four games. It's like he was going gangbusters in the first several games of the streak, but last few days, not so much, and a lot more strikeouts, a lot of 0-for's. I think he had an 0-for-6 game in one of those blowouts, but what's going on with him? Do you see anything obvious?
Well, I agree with you that he doesn't look as happy as he did when he first came back and he was hitting everything. And I sort of wonder if maybe he's not 100%. And I say that because he's catching the balls and when he sprints, he's good. I just got the feeling that, I don't know. I mean, I hate to sit back here and diagnose something that's probably not true, but it just looks to me like he's just not. He hit a ball. He had a ground ball. I think it was in this game. He had a ground ball in this game. And okay, he was going to be out at first, but it wasn't. It would have been a lot closer if he'd actually beat it down the line. And I'm not saying it was bad for him not to run it out because every player does that. But in the past, he would have. It was one of those balls like as soon as he came back this year, it was one of those balls that he would have tore down that line because it was deep enough that he might have had a chance to at least make him force a good throw, and he just didn't. And I just didn't see that. And I don't know what it is, but I feel it too. I can't. If I knew what it was, they'd pay me more money than I'm making. So I don't. I know we have to have him going to run to fuel the lineup, and I really wish we weren't having to play Arcia every day. Not because he's not playing second base well, and he's had some hits, and Ozzie wasn't hitting, but because when he's in the lineup, it almost certainly means that Ronnie's got to play right field instead of DH, I just think that the lineup's better. When Ronnie gets like 2 or 3 days of DHing a week, maybe that's just me.
Yeah, and lately he's been doing a lot of right field. Now, yesterday was day off, and I was kind of hoping that would give him a chance to reset. And maybe it did, given that he did scald a ball out to center field that got knocked down. But, still, that's the kind of thing we wanted to see is him hitting the ball on a barrel and getting something for it. But I guess we're going to have to keep watching it and just see what happens this weekend. But yeah, that's something that I've been concerned about a little bit for the same kind of reasons you're talking about is he 100%? Does he have his legs under him really?
Yeah, he got the hit he got. He got a hit right off the bat and they were all happy because it broke his little slump. It was just over the first base. They were shifted against him, which is dumb. And they shift against him, and he just looped one over the first baseman's head that the second baseman would have caught. And, you know, they were all happy and dug out about that, but he didn't look like – I mean, he hit the one to the track, hit a couple to deep into the outfield. But I want to see him doing what he was doing, which is the line drives in the gap and letting the home runs come. And it seems to me like he may be pressing. Now that's, you know, don't scream at me because that's the way I see it, but, and it's probably not true, but that's what it looks like at times.
Gotcha. Well, for sure, other things, other aspects of this lineup, and especially the pitching, is still hanging in there really well. Yeah, bullpen kind of, I guess you have to say the bullpen let us down today because a leadoff walk is what ended up scoring the winning run. But, I mean, if you don't score two or three runs minimum, then anything can happen. So I'm not here to blame the bullpen. I'm here to say the offense just couldn't do anything against the Cubs pitching today. And that's going to happen every now and then. And I don't expect it to happen all weekend for sure. We just need a day to, again, reset and get this team back going again, I think. So.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, Thompson was good, but Davey Ross pulled him after 5 1/3. And we had their bullpen and you know, they got a man on. Simmons bunted him over. He stole third, sacrifice fly, that scored. And I tweeted at the time that, you know, he doesn't have a team of world beaters, but they do basic baseball pretty good.
Yep.
And that's the, you know, they didn't think, oh, I got to go for the bunt down. Beautiful bunt by Simba. And then Bilar stole third. AJ was watching him, but he was going to steal anyway. Third, and then the sack fly brought in the run. And, you know, they won the game with that run, and it was well executed. And like you said, it was just, you know, Ozuna was back to being Ozuna, first pitch swinging with a, after he walks a man and hits another one. Why he did that, I don't know. It seems to make Brian Jordan happy, but I don't know who else would be happy about that. But the lineup's been good, and I don't think we can complain about one day. If it carries on for 3 days, then there'll be a problem.
Yeah. Just remember that 13-game streak that I researched about 1982 when they opened the season 13-0, and then they lost the next five. So you don't want to do that. No, definitely not when you've gotten yourself back in the race. But let's talk about something else, though, and you – caught something today on MLB Network Radio with Alex Anthopoulos being interviewed that I thought was kind of intriguing. And let's get into that a little bit. First of all, set the scene and tell me what you heard.
Well, I read it after the fact, but it was an interview on the front office show with Jim Bowden, and Bowden tweeted out after the interview that Alex Anthopoulos said, even with Rosario and Soroka coming back, he might look at an arm, but he definitely wanted a left-handed bat for the lineup. And that was the quote, for the lineup. And I looked at that and went, well, that's interesting. For the lineup, that means it's not a bench bat. We're not talking about Joe Old Guy here. The whole thing that went over it was, went in my mind, was okay. So everybody, when they say that, you know, your mind sort of runs to Andrew Benintendi. Left-handed bat, plays every day, hitting 300, getting on base, good. Not hitting as many home runs, but, of course, he hits in the Grand Canyon out there. So that's going to come along. If you're wanting a guy who gets on base with a high OBP, then you're talking about Benintendi. But I'm not sure that the Royals are going to trade him. He's one of these guys that Dayton Moore fell in love with, traded for, and has fallen in love with out there. And so I'm not sure they're going to trade him, which made me sort of jump out and look for who else it could be. And at about that time, I looked up and Ian Happ was batting for the Cubs. And I thought, there's a left-handed bat and a right-handed bat. How fortuitous. I wonder what he can cost us. So that's been beating around in my brain is, you know, is Happ the guy? Are we looking at Ben Gamble from Pittsburgh, Tyler Naquin from Cincinnati, you brought up, maybe somebody like Tapia, who I don't know why Tapia's name comes into this. He doesn't seem to hit a lot. But you know, guys like that, left-handed bats that on teams that aren't going anywhere and, that they would like to move, like Naquin. I'm not sure the Cubs want to move Happ that easily, but I'm pretty sure they would because, you know, he's got a year and a half before free agency, but he'll definitely test free agency. So makes sense to trade him if you can get something for him. I just think he'd be expensive.
Yeah, and you were suggesting that other people are going to want him too. And of course, I think it's going to be a seller's market when we come up to July. But yeah, right now Ian Happ has got a 136 OPS plus. That's this just in. That's pretty good. And
yeah.
He's batting 282, 7 homers, 31 ribeyes. He can even steal a few bases. So yeah, there's nothing not to like here. He's only on a 1 year deal right now, but he's still got, you're right, another arbitration year available. So he's not a rental per se, year and a half to go. So I think he's going to be a little on the more expensive side. The question is, yeah, what it's going to take to get him. You go to guys like Tyler Naquin. He's a rental from Cincinnati. And he's on a $4 million deal. I think the Reds would be very happy to relieve themselves of the extra $1.5 million or so that he'll be due by the 1st August. So, yeah, I think that might be the easiest guy to get. Benintendi, I think I saw was are effectively a rental. I think he's only got this year to go.
Yeah, 3 months, 2.5 months, yeah.
Yeah, so you would think he might be still available, even if they have this bro love kind of thing going with Kansas City and their front office. But I think any of those guys would be viable, certainly. And then the question is, what do you want to give up, and what have the Braves got in order to try to make a deal like that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the Reds can probably use just about anything. Pitching wise, you might get him for Yanoa. Maybe less than that. It depends on what they're actually after.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's probably a little less than that in the case of Naquin. That's probably not the case in the and when we're talking about those other guys, though.
No. You're gonna cough up somebody for like Drew Water for Ian Happ. I tell you, there's another one out there. I don't know that he's ever going to hit a lot, but the Blue Jays got Bradley Zimmer. I don't know. He's never really been what he was supposed to be, and I just wonder what's wrong with him. But I think that anybody they trade for, you made a point before we were on that we need to trade for somebody that's hitting, not somebody who we think we hope will hit. So that sort of kills the Zimmer thing. But Happ. Ben Gamel's having a good year with the Pirates. He's been hitting really well for them all year. Where the heck is he at? He's hitting 253, 50, 386. He's not slugging a whole lot, but he's on base 350 clip. He's hitting 256. He's got a handful of homers. I don't know how low do you want to go on the bat? How low? I don't know.
Yeah, he's only got 140 at bats at this point. What do the league leaders have right now? Well, let's say Ian Happ right now has 247. So that kind of tells you the kind of use that the Pirates are making of Gamel. So you would think that they might let him go if you give him the right incentive, because they're not using him terribly much, really.
Well, he's 31 and he's free agent at the end of the year too. So.
Yeah, so there's much more reasons for them to get something of value for him, I guess. So at least there's some viable alternatives, it looks like. Anthopoulos holds things really close to the vest, like state secret kind of close to the vest. And for him to let out something like that on an interview suggests to me that this is a definite that he's going to go after, and that he may even have some real ideas about how he's going to get it accomplished. But at the same time, I continue to go back to the fact that with more playoff teams, you're going to have more guys being sought for. And if you only got, say, you know, 4 or 5 left-handed bats that are viable in the marketplace, that still might be a tough purchase to make. But that kind of dovetailed into something else that we were talking about earlier, and that's, you know, what do the Braves have available to trade with? And most outfits that do rankings of prospects do so at the beginning of the year, and that's it. They don't bother to do mid-season updates. Fangraphs has done that, and they have some interesting changes going on with the Braves prospect list that they have put together. And I want to get into that a little bit because it may affect adversely, really, the Braves' ability to get something going around the trade deadline, which I think I heard today was August 2nd at 6 p.m. or something like that. It's not going to be July 31st, but they're going to move it around, as was put into the CBA this year, to help accommodate some teams and the schedule a little better. So in any case, August 2nd, and right now, I'll just read off the top names in this prospect list that Fangraphs has right now. Michael Harris, number one. He is the top 100 prospect in their eyes at number 36. He is the only Brave prospect that's in the top 100. That right there is a kind of a moment for you. Second is Spencer Strider in the majors. Third, Vaughn Grissom, high A ball. Jared Schuster, pitching for Mississippi in Double A. Kyle Mueller at Triple A. Spencer Schwellenbeck, starting pitcher, not listed as having a level right now at all. Is he hurt? I haven't
heard
this.
He's on the injured list. He's on the minor league injured list.
That explains that exactly. Diego Benitez, third baseman. He's in the Dominican Summer League. He hasn't even gotten to the States yet. Bryce Elder, Triple A, and has been in the majors. Geraldo Quintero, shortstop, low A ball. Drew Waters. We had to get all the way back to the 10th spot to find Drew Waters. He's dropped that far in the minds of these guys that are evaluating at Fangraphs. He's at Triple A. Then you go from there. A.J. Smith, Freddie Tarnock, Tucker Davidson, Ambioris Tiberes, Alan Rangel, Andrew Hoffman, and so on down the list from there. So I'm wondering what it is that the Braves may have to sell, because right now the cupboard's not bare, but I think it's having the same kind of supply problems that we're seeing around the country on other products.
Yeah, it's a very middle of the pack kind of system right now. They're not really awful, but there's nobody down there once you get past Michael Harris. There's not really anybody down there. I know everybody loves Schuster. Maybe he's something, but and I'm not saying that because I don't like Schuster. That's not the point here. The point is that when you look at the pitchers in that list, let me get the list back up so I don't tell a lie, because I really really hate being wrong on here. But when you look at this, Strider, Schuster's the third. Mueller, we've seen Kyle. I wish Kyle could find his location. Bone and push it and get it in place, because if he could locate that fastball, he'd be really well. And then you go, gee whiz, Schwellenbach, he was a two-way player, as I recall. Third baseman, starting pitcher, Bryce Elder, shortstop, center field, A.J. Smith, Shelver. When he's a high school kid, they paid a lot to get him. Freddie Tarnock, he's a three or four starter at his ceiling. Tucker Davidson, we've seen Tuck. Here he's 13, and they're putting Tarnock as having a higher ceiling above him. That doesn't bode well for what they think of Tuck. And then third baseman there, Alan Rangel, Andrew Hoffman, and then you drop way down to Robier Salinas at high A. Brooks Wilson is there. Victor Vodnik, I know him. He's a reliever. Jesse Franklin down there, and then you get down to Darius Vines. Darius Vines is a good little pitcher. He's in Double A right now, but he's 26. So that tells me they're looking sort of at they've ranked him 35 plus. That's organizational depth, and everybody below Cal Cooney or Cal Conley, who is an A ball DH, is a 35 plus player. That's what Jocelyn De La Cruz, Vines, Austin Smith, and Adam Shoemaker. All those guys are 35 plus players. That's organizational depth. There's this is a meat and potatoes thing, but it isn't a steak.
Yeah, you mentioned that you call this a middle of the pack kind of organization here, and I gotta say I think you're being kind with that, because really there's not, other than the guys who've already made the majors, I don't see a lot of guys who could make the majors. Maybe Schuster could, sure, but I think Drew Waters would have if he was would have already done so if he was truly major league ready and capable. You mentioned Mueller. You know, he had a brilliant outing at AAA, I think last week or so. He does have 12 strikeouts per nine at the AAA level and 3 walks per nine at that level as well. So his ERA is under 3, so that's actually pretty good. So there's certainly signs of life there, at least. But, you know, once you get past those guys, I mean, I went to see the Mississippi Braves last week. I have seen the Mississippi Braves often over the years, and I'd like to think I could recognize major leaguers when I see them. I saw Dansby when he was there. I saw Ozzie Albies when he was there. I saw Freddie Freeman and Jason Hayward both on the same team together. Those guys stand out. I didn't see a lot of that happening last week. I did not see a lot of major league guys, if any, when I watched this guy's play. Freddie Tarnock started. He started off pretty well, but faded as he went along. I kind of think that feels more like a relief pitcher, maybe long relief at best. I didn't see Jared Schuster pitch. That would have been nice, but you know, you can't have everything. But I'm not seeing a lot of major league talent here, and that seems to be reflected a little bit in these rankings here, and that makes me concerned about what the Braves are going to be able to do at the trade deadline. That's the whole point of this little rabbit trail that we're on here.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think, okay, if you're going to be coldly honest, if you've got somebody you really want, if there's a player out there that you really want, then you're going to throw Drew Waters and whoever they want at him, because –
yeah.
Almost everybody down there is replaceable. And, you know, I don't know who that is. I don't know. I wouldn't give up more than Waters for half. I think that's pretty well a straight up thing that we talked about beforehand. You made that point that it's pretty well a straight up Waters for half. Good luck. And cause Waters is hitting like Hap did like 4 years ago, which is swinging a lot. And, last year, when we did the thing with the ESPN, he said, well, you know, he could become Starlin Marte. God bless him. I wish he would become Starlin Marte. But I don't see that happening in the near future. And so it means, well, you trade him before his value goes completely down the drain. It's not that I don't like Waters. I always thought Waters would get up at about the same time as Pache, and Pache is playing for Oakland. So there you have that. Another player we busted over here and didn't mention is Laureano. I read in the week that the Marlins were in hard on Laureano, and certainly the Marlins have everything they need to get anybody they want. I don't know that Oakland would trade him because they own him for like 3.5 more years. So I don't see that there's an urgency to trade him there. The other thing that this popped into my head was we've got the draft coming up here at the All-Star break. Because the minor leagues are in the situation they're in, because there's no guy down there who's a starting guy, would you throw your chips in and select Kumar Rocker?
Boy, that might be an interesting thing. I would have to say he's probably a risk, but at the same time, when I'm seeing the pre-draft rankings and mock drafts, I don't think anybody who's doing those, especially Baseball America, who knows what they're doing when they do a mock draft, they don't believe in the kid. And it looks like they think he might be a second rounder at best.
Well, I read something the other day, and I don't remember where it was at, or that, you know, the problem is that we haven't seen his medicals, okay?
Yeah.
And if he's willing to release his medicals, his agent says he should be able to. So if he's willing to release his medicals, I mean, what are we going to get? They're mocking us to a high school lefty. you know what the success rate on a high school pitcher is? It's not really great. And you know that Rocker can pitch on the big stage. We've hired pitchers with problems before who've come through everybody, Max Freeman. And I just wonder what the benefit is of saying, I ain't giving Kumar Rocker first round money. I will draft this high school pitcher and hope that he becomes somebody, in 5 or 6 years. And instead of having Rocker, who could probably be up in 2 or less. Because, Leslie, he's a fairly polished pitcher. Everybody said last year Rocker will be up before Leiter because he's more polished pitcher. He may not have the ceiling, but he'll be up before Leiter. So if you believe that last year and he's healthy, why don't you believe that this year? And why don't you plug that gap that's coming up when we have these guys who are going to want big contracts and we're not going to give them to everybody?
Now, the Braves in the last few years, and of course, this has a lot to do, I think, with the sanctions that were put against them for international signings, but the Braves have been all over college players, and there's a couple of reasons you might want to do that. Number one is the fact that they're not going to have as much leverage when it comes to negotiations, number one. Number two, they're going to help you fill out the organization and replenish the organization. And number three is those who are really good are going to be closer to the majors, and this is a win-now team, obviously. I don't know if they're going to do that again this year or not, but right now this draft is being characterized as a position player draft. And if you're going to get a pitcher, I don't think there's any pitcher that you would necessarily want to get that is going to be good for your organization that you can't get in the second round or later.
That's right.
So if it were me, I'd be going after a hitter. And there's a couple in there. The one I've sort of gotten enamored with is coming out of James Madison. I can't remember his name now, but he's sort of has this Aaron Judge vibe. He's like 6'5" and got raw power, and he excelled in the Cape Cod League, hit a bunch of home runs there. Yeah, if you want a kid who can have King Kong kind of power, that might be the one. I don't know if he's going to be available at slot number 20. He might, and if he is, I'd probably want to go after him. But in any case, you don't go after the pitchers in that first round, in my mind, if you've got better position players out there, especially when you can get a guy who's, you know, if you're still bent on getting pitchers, they'll all be there, or most of them will be there when round number two comes around.
Yeah, I agree with that, except, you know, I was reading something on the history of the draft for another thing a couple of days ago, and when they first initiated the draft, all the teams, there was a rush from college players to who they had been drafting before to high school players. And they started drafting high school players. And then, Bill James did a thing where he looked back on that and he said, it's amazing how shockingly bad those high school players turned out compared to their college counterparts who were drafted. So MLB, the teams drifted away from high school and back to the college ranks. And then, as the college ranks started to look a little thinner, they went back and started drafting high. So this, what I'm telling you is this goes back and forth.
It does.
And right now, there's, if you take a pitcher now, he's a college pitcher in the first round, I guess. I just pulled up the pipeline draft thing, outfielder, second base, shortstop, catcher, third baseman, second baseman, outfielder, right-hand pitcher, Brock Porter, Orchard State, St. Mary's. He's the number 10 guy on their list, the first pitcher. Normally, the pitchers are in 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7. Dylan Lesko, Buffalo, above Buford, Georgia. I guess he's a high school guy. I don't know.
And he's also injured. He's had Tommy John. He's going to be one of those interesting guys because he could have been number one on the entire list. So at position 20, there may be a couple of guys, he's one of them, that the Braves might consider. You rehab him, and then you've got top five talent on your roster.
Yeah, is he more of a less of a risk than Rocker?
I don't know exactly, because the other problem is that some of these guys, and the kid from Alabama is another one who was injured, just have had – I mean, we're still suffering from the COVID
Connor
problem.
Connor Prelip, he's a pitcher. Connor Prelip's listed as left-handed pitcher from Alabama.
Yes, he's the other guy. There's – still, we're still suffering from the effects of the COVID years, having limited the number of innings some of these guys have been throwing. And that especially is going to be a problem with the high school kids, because you just didn't see them until they became seniors. And yeah, you have one good year and then boom, you jump to the top of the draft, it seems. So, I don't know how to characterize the risk. One thing I was going to say about the college versus high school thing is I talked to Brian Bridges once, and he told me that, you know, once you get kids in college, you essentially know what they are. But you have to project them if they're in high school, because you see what you see, and you kind of hope that they develop into something great. But college kids are what they are once they get to age 22 or so. So there's not a lot of projection left there. So it is a coin toss sometimes, trying to figure out where you're going to go, whether it's high school or college, and you have to just. You have to really be good at your scouting, and that's why these guys see hundreds of players every year and travel all over the country, because it's not an exact science, but sometimes you're going to get them right, sometimes you're not.
Yeah, Bill, I don't know anything about scouting. I wouldn't, you know, if a scout came up and slapped me, I probably wouldn't know who he was. But if – Here's what I'm saying. I read everything I read. I listen to, you know, ESPN's got this guy and Pipeline, and I hear all of them talking. They all say the same thing. Well, it's a pretty nothing draft. It really is. You get past Drew Jones and a couple of guys at the top. Once you get past that, we'll take anybody, because the batters are much of a muchness. The pitchers probably don't deserve to go before, you know, unless you're really desperate for pitchers. They don't, like the Angels, maybe. They took 20 last time and then signed 10 more as undrafted free agents. You don't really need to take them, because if you don't take them in the first round, they'll be there in the second. And some of them will be there in the third. And so if you're – here's the point. Here's what I'm thinking. We know what Kumar Rocker is.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he's the right guy or not. All I'm saying is, if I'm drafted at number 20 and you're telling me that I got a guy who could be in the major leagues in 2 years, or I can draft a high school pitcher, and high school pitchers, most of the guys we've got out there are high school pitchers, who didn't quite make it. So do we have time to fail with those guys? And the whole draft to pitchers and trade for what you need thing works if you have pitchers that other teams want and are willing to trade for. And so that's your point of, we need to draft that bat. But I would never draft a guy who's only going to be a DH, or a guy who's only a first baseman DH, and maybe you hope possibly he wouldn't embarrass himself in the corner outfield. I would want someone who the combine thing was on today, and they asked Dowd and a couple other guys what they were looking for. Says, I want players that hit the ball line to line, line drives. I don't want anybody hitting big home runs now, because they don't need to impress me with that. They need to show me they can control the bat, hit the ball line to line. Yes, that's what I want. I don't you draft Judge because Judge is a consummate hitter. He is a, as well as a big brute of a man who can kill a baseball. But every big brute of a man who can kill a baseball isn't a good hitter. And so you run into that. They're saying that, there are good hitters in the lineup. You're probably a half a dozen of them you can interchange. Then are we really gaining anything at that point? And maybe you should look towards your international draft to pick up players who are going to be that guy at some point. I don't know. I'm not smart enough. I'm just asking the questions here, and I don't have answers. I wish I did. I'd make more money.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If you're going to try and make money as a scout, I don't know that that's the right place to go. <'Cause Yeah. laughs> they have thankless jobs, unfortunately, and I think that's part of it. Baseball America has Kumar Rocker listed as 19th now. They're in their prior list, they had him at 35th. So he's certainly at least come up in their minds, and maybe that makes him viable to somebody there in the opening round again. So for all the reasons you're suggesting, though, yeah, anything that gives you less risk in the draft is probably a good thing. And that goes for pitchers and position players alike. So it's going to be curious to see how the Braves go on that. The draft is, what, July 19th or something? 17th to 19th, I think it is.
It's All-Star weekend, yes.
Ah, okay. So that's going to be interesting to see if as well as we get some more viewership that way, because that might make it a little more of an event than it's been in the past, and I'd like to see that at least for the game. So all that to say, so yeah, Alex Anthopoulos is going to get a left-handed bat somewhere along the way somehow, and whether he gets one of those guys that we've named or somebody else, good questions. But I'm just kind of curious what the Braves are going to have to give up to get some guy, and as well how they're going to use him, because you also raised that point about putting him or getting him for the lineup. That says to me that they don't think that there's a position on the field that's doing enough for them, I guess. And I am kind of curious which position they are intending to perhaps replace. Or, you know, do you make Ronnie the full-time DH and sit Ozuna to the bench? Or what? How do you go about that? I'm going to be curious to see how that works as well. So
I think that's Duvall. Quite frankly, Duvall had a hell of a week hitting AAA pitching. And
yes,
I'm not taking anything against him, because you got to hit the pitchers, you got to do what's right with them. But he's still popping up an awful lot, and I think the internal metrics aren't good for Duvall. I don't have anything in front of me, but I think the internal metrics on Duvall are not good. And I think that they know that Rosario can be a slow starter, and they would like to have somebody they can play out in the outfield and not lose. When you play Heredia out there, yeah, okay, he's going to catch the ball. Heredia's an outfielder, good outfielder, not an all-star. He's going to catch the ball, but he's not going to hit a lot. And so you want guys on both corners who can hit. So if you're giving Ronnie a day at DH and you want to put Rosario in right field or left field and the new guy in right field, you can do that without having to worry about, well, I got a right-handed pitcher out there and, you know, Duvall's got as much chance of hitting Max Scherzer as I do. So maybe a lefty has a better chance against that. I kind of think that's where it's at, because I look around the lineup and I say, well, Olsen's not going there. Swanson's not going anywhere. Riley's not going anywhere. The catching duo are killing people. Money Mikey's in center field. Ronnie's in the lineup. Ozuna's earning too much money to sit on the bench until he just gets to the point where he becomes Dan Uggla. So I think, you know, right now, depending on when Ronnie comes back, and if Arcia can continue to hit at second base, which I have no confidence in at all, I hope he just stomps it in my face that I'm so wrong and he's finally come into the guy. I know Snicker called him a dude. I'm not sure that's true, but I don't have anything against him, but he's not shown he can hit consistently over his time, and he's had chances. So that worries me a little bit. Ozzy wasn't hurt hitting when he was left. We don't know when he's going to come back. So you could see a Cesar Hernandez pickup. Because you know what you're getting with Hernandez, and he's got thump. He's going to run into the ball. And that's just arbitrary. I didn't pull that out anywhere. I'm just saying you're going to get, maybe it's second base, but probably it's left field, and that's the only place I can see it.
Yeah, that's probably about right. Because you go through the lineup like you just did, and you. Got it. You can come up with reasons not to get any of these guys replaced. But, I mean, we lost one of the few left-handed bats we got such as he's been in when Ozzy got hurt. He wasn't doing that well from the left side, but either way, it's still a left-handed bat that we could use. And so that does make sense that he would pursue such a thing. And Rosario aside, it sounds like he wants a couple of them going. So, yeah, that's the view.
Mm-hmm. Hernandez is a switch hitter. I mean, I just had to look that up because I wasn't sure, but I thought he was a switch hitter. So he's a switch hitter, and he's not killing the people and playing for the Nationals. He's got an 85 WRC plus and 0.4 WAR. He hadn't had a home run this year, so which that means he's not found his groove yet. At the same time, he has a history of hitting home runs, so I don't know. I mean, it just seems to me that they're not going to give up on Ozzy. They've got Gosselin, they've got Arcia. Push come to shove, they can stick Shoemaker out there and see if he can hit. I just don't know how they're going to do anything except how it's going to be anything except an infielder, or about an outfielder rather. And if it's a guy like Ian Happ, he can play second base too. I mean, he's done it in his lifetime. I'm not sure how good he is. Probably not very, but they moved him to the outfield. But having said that, I mean, I just think we're out here throwing darts at a dartboard that's moving on us. And so that makes it even harder to hit the target. But a left-handed bat, we'll look forward to that. We'll fill the wind. We'll ignore everything John Hyman says.
Well, I think it's about time to wrap this up and get out off the porch. As we've killed a bunch of time here, I'll give you an update that Phillies have now tied the Nationals. They were two runs down in the eighth inning, but they've now tied the game at 5. The Mets are killing the Marlins now. It's 10-1, so doesn't look like the Braves are going to stand pat. It looks like they'll lose that extra half game and have to try and see if they can start doing a little better. But overall, this month, it's still 14-1 for the month of June. And the Mets have certainly come back down to earth as they've been facing a tough schedule. But there's still some games to go here. They've got two more against the Cubs before things get more interesting with the Giants and Dodgers coming to Atlanta. And next week, it's the Mets continue to have a tough schedule all the way through. I think it's about July 2nd. They'll have the Astros coming up here shortly. They'll get the Marlins again and some other tough teams. So there's still opportunities for the Braves to gain a bit in the NL East and take advantage of this schedule. And again, 15 games head-to-head still with the Mets. So all is not lost regardless. The team has obviously been playing better, and we're looking to see better things as we go in the next couple of weeks here still. Anything else that you got there before we get out of here, Fred?
Yeah, I keep hearing that, just quick, I keep hearing that we got 15 games left for the Mets. I'm going to tell you, over time, head-to-head series tend to end up half and half. They tend to be 500, they end up being 500 series, and we have to beat the other teams more often than the Mets beat the other teams. That's what we've got to do. And right now we've given a hell of a head start. We caught up 5 games off of them, or 5 or 6 games, 6.5 games. And we caught up on them. We're going to give them one back today, but this is going to be this kind of thing. And over the next period of time, we just have to hope they hit another cold stretch. We hit a hot one at the same time. Cause the head to head thing, that's going to be a 500 outcome. And if it's not, I'll be terribly surprised. Other than that, have a good weekend.
We'll do our best. Although if the Mets keep falling apart, that'll help us too.
All for the Mets falling apart.
Yes, there you go. Well, do us a favor and check out our writing on tomahawktake.com. We'll try and see if we can give you something of use to read about on the Atlanta Braves. But for now, this is Off Leo's Rocker. Fred and I thank you for hearing out these two grumpy old men. See you next time.
This has been Off Leo's Rocker, a podcast presentation from TomahawkTake.com and Fansided LLC, a subsidiary of Minute Media, Inc. Opinions expressed on the show today are solely those of the participants, since, like the agents of the Impossible Mission Force, Minute Media has disavowed knowledge of us or anything that we're doing. All rights reserved. One of the musical selections used today comes to you under the auspices of the Creative Commons license, terms of which are available at creativecommons.org/licenses/by/4.0. This was a piece by Kevin McLeod entitled Comic Plotting, which was modified to fit in the available space. His works are featured at incompetech.filmmusic.io. All other musical selections used come via rights already purchased by tomahawktake.com. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast today, and hopefully you won't feel a draft when your team is streaking. We'll see you next time. This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds.